KALW.
Complexity is a barrier to getting the vaccine out.
California's now moved on to a new vaccination phase. People 65 and older now have priority, but there's a very limited supply.
We cannot compare a 65 and up that lives in La Jolla to a 65 that lives in Imperial County, where we are completely overburdened historically.
We'll hear about vaccine shortages and other challenges health departments are facing. Then we meet a chiropractor in a story from our At Work series.
A lot of people didn't realize that chiropractic was considered essential and that we were open.
And we go behind the scenes with someone who organizes mural painting in downtown Oakland.
It's really like about what art resonates with the business owner and what neighborhood.
That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. California and the Bay Area are continuing to vaccinate more and more residents against COVID-19 each day, but not without major challenges. For starters, there's extremely limited supply, forcing officials to make tough decisions like who to vaccinate first. KALW's health reporter Angela Johnston joins me now to explain more. Hey, Angela.
Hi, Hannah.
All right, we got so many questions about vaccine. There's a lot to think about.
So much to think about. We could probably fill a week's worth of shows answering questions because the rollout has been pretty complex and involves everyone from the feds down to the counties. So because of this, the state and some counties have been pressured to be more transparent about this really complicated process, especially about shortages and why we're vaccinating who we're vaccinating.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, Angela, where are we at right now in the vaccination timeline?
Right now, California says counties can vaccinate people 65 and older, all healthcare professionals, and people in long-term care or nursing facilities. Up until recently, the state was going to operate by a tiered system: healthcare workers first, then by age and people with higher risk because of their jobs, underlying health conditions, or homelessness.
Right. So no more vaccines based on jobs?
Not for now. Kind of. Some smaller counties had already started vaccinating people in education, emergency services, and food and agriculture. So the state okayed these categories. But the clear direction from the state is counties should take an age-based approach going forward. Meaning for this current phase, vaccinating people 65 and up, regardless of whether they're a bus driver or have diabetes.
And why did the state decide to go in this direction?
A few reasons. One is simply scarcity. There's very limited vaccine supply right now. California, with its almost 40 million people, is only receiving 250,000 to 500,000 vaccine doses a week. Mm. Production will probably ramp up with the Biden administration and also when other vaccines get approved. But the state looked at mortality rates. By and large, age is the biggest factor in determining who will die or be hospitalized for COVID-19.
Right.
Here's a crazy statistic. If you're over the age of 85, you have a 630 times higher chance of death than someone ages 18 to 29.
630 times higher. That's amazing.
Yeah, and if you're 65 to 74, that number is still high, 90 times. Whereas if you're, say, in your 40s, that number is only like 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason is something State Surgeon General Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris said over and over again at a vaccine advisory board meeting.
Complexity is a barrier to the speed at which we are getting the vaccine out. Like, simplifying saves lives.
What does she mean by that, Angela?
Yeah, the idea is that the fewer categories and tiers to the rollout plan, the more likely people will just go and get vaccinated. And that complex systems tend to benefit people with privilege.
Okay, but how are people responding to this?
Well, I heard many community organizations and stakeholders say, what about equity? What about essential workers who can't shelter in place at last week's meeting? Here's a clip of Sylvia Yee with the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund.
We're not on the list. There is no disability category or group that's explicitly on the list. If they're not in the list, they disappear, and that perpetuates a long-lasting inequality.
And Esther Bejarano, a community health worker in Imperial County, argued that not all 65-year-olds are the same.
We cannot compare a 65 and up that lives in La Jolla to a 65 that lives in Imperial County, where we are completely overburdened historically from air quality. Our lungs are not growing the same. And so we are dying on a daily basis.
So, Angela, I mean, Esther has a point there.
Yeah, some 65-year-olds can stay home all day trying to navigate the phone mazes to book an appointment. Others don't speak English or are still working or don't have younger children to walk them through the process, which is a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's community groups. How is the state responding?
Well, I spoke with Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris after the meeting, and she says she hears it.
What I want to emphasize, right, is that we've heard loud and clear that some folks will not be happy with this decision, right? We understand that. And for those folks, the concern is, hey, does that mean that this person who's 65 plus or this person who is older is now ahead of me in line? And what I want to say is they may be ahead of you in line for the vaccine, but they're making the line for the emergency room and for a hospital bed a heck of a lot shorter.
Yeah, and she says the state is thinking of ways to make sure they can target vulnerable communities within that age group in an equitable way.
Okay, but Angela, here's the thing. I've been hearing lots of stories about people just showing up at a distribution site, you know, regardless of their age or their demographic, in hopes of getting a vaccine.
Yeah, I've been hearing about it too. And the state says providers may offer doses to people in these lower priority groups when doses are about to expire or they've been thawed and would otherwise go to waste. But there are super fridges or freezers at a lot of these sites, so there are actually aren't as many places where the vaccine is truly going to waste. Plus, there's no guarantee that these folks would be able to get their second shot at the same place or in the same way. Mm-hmm. Still, to address any potential leftover supply, the state's actually hired a third party to take over its distribution and maximize efficiency.
Okay, and so let's bring it to the Bay Area. What is actually happening here?
Yeah, first, some counties have dashboards out now where you can check how many vaccines have been given out. Also, mass vaccination sites are beginning to open, like there's one at San Francisco City College. And the San Francisco Department of Public Health announced last week that their goal was to try to vaccinate all San Franciscans by the end of June.
June? You know, that sounds like an ambitious goal.
I know, and I was surprised when I heard that because last week the state said it could take 20 to 22 weeks to vaccinate everyone 65 and up. Plus, when I signed up for San Francisco's vaccination notification program, it told me I'd likely get mine by the end of the year.
So what accounts for that huge discrepancy?
I asked Dr. Naveena Baba. She's San Francisco's Deputy Director of Public Health. And she said that San Francisco set that as a goal because they want to build the infrastructure to vaccinate everyone by June. Mm. They're obviously still subject to the supply coming from the feds and the state. But they want to prepare to get there should more vaccines become available.
Okay, Angela, anything else we should know right now?
Well, this is just all changing so fast, and there are just so many moving parts. So keep checking klw.org for links and more information, and I think we'll just do the best we can to post things up there when they become available.
And looking forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Angela. Angela Johnston is KLW's health reporter. You can find her stories and the latest on the COVID-19 pandemic at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we've got a story from our series, At Work, looking at how COVID has changed our jobs.
I have a lot of pride in my work.
How do you do it?
Sprays, masks, gloves.
I'm with the swamp team.
Hi, my friends, and how are you?
It's nice now with technology.
Pandora's box has been opened.
It's a beautiful way to make your living, but it's more work than I ever imagined.
The secret to long-term health most of the time isn't really a secret at all. Prevention and early detection are key to staying healthy and keeping chronic disease and health problems at bay. But because the pandemic has led to shortages of medical resources and healthcare workers, public health officials like Dr. Anthony Fauci have suggested some drastic measures.
Well, I mean, obviously, when you have a seriousness of an outbreak the way we're seeing right now, there's going to be a significant stress on supplies, and that's what we're seeing play out right now. One of the things that can be done is to delay, if not cancel, anything that's elective.
But this approach has been creating what some doctors are calling an invisible epidemic, one that's happening at home as people stay sheltered in place and don't seek care for other health issues and pain. In our ongoing series, At Work, KALW's talking to folks in the Bay Area about what they do and what's changed for them. Today, we meet a chiropractor who's treating patients coping with the pain and strain of living in this unprecedented age of COVID-19. KALW's Carla Estevez has her story.
My friends and I sometimes joke about feeling like we're in our 80s, even though we're really only in our late 20s. It's mostly an exaggeration, you know, whenever we seem to be forgetting a lot of things. But for me, it's usually due to back pain. You see, while I spend plenty of time in front of a computer working on audio pieces, I also started serving part-time in a restaurant at the very beginning of 2020. And that work can be rough on the body. Thankfully, I found a chiropractor in my neighborhood who also takes my insurance.
My name's Dr. Carrie Owsley, and I'm a chiropractor here in Oakland.
Carrie Owsley has been providing chiropractic care to Oakland residents since 2007, but her connection to this type of treatment goes all the way back to her youth.
I was in a really severe car accident when I was 17, where my jaw was broken in a couple of places, my arm was broken, and so I went to a chiropractor after that. That really helped with just getting me moving better and pain relief.
Dr. Owsley told me it's hard to predict what would have happened if she didn't get that care. People heal in different ways and at different speeds. But she does think that skipping out on rehabilitative treatments and preventative care could have lasting impacts down the road.
When we're young and we don't have treatment, the body can heal and maybe the pain is less, but later on we can have issues, right? So maybe I would have more chronic neck or back pain today, maybe more limited range of motion, things like that.
And if her accident happened during COVID, it's likely she may have received more infrequent chiropractic care, or perhaps none at all. Some of that has to do with the misunderstanding of the field.
A lot of people didn't realize that chiropractic was considered essential and that we were open. And then, yeah, just as people are feeling comfortable, but then as people are working from home, not exercising as much, you know, some people are like, oh, I try to hold out.
Dr. Owsley worries about the long-term effects of delaying care.
People are sitting at their dining room tables or kitchen islands, or they're sitting even in their bed working from home, or, you know, on their couch. And a lot of people thought, oh, you know, I can get by with working like this for a few weeks, but then it's been 9 months. It's like all of a sudden their back is just like in a spasm, or they're just starting to get chronic, you know, like repetitive issues from it. But then their back pain got so bad that they're like, I was kind of forced to come in.
Dr. Owsley is also concerned that people may be postponing treatment because they don't think the pain associated with muscles and other soft tissues are as serious as, say, the pain that comes with a broken bone.
And even insurance companies look at broken bones more serious sometimes, but broken bones usually heal up, you know, usually the longest is 6 weeks time, whereas like a soft tissue injury can take months to heal and even cause a lot of, you know, chronic issues. Where I had my car accident, even though I had treatment afterwards, those muscles were just never quite 100%.
She's not just worried about people neglecting an injury. She's also concerned about new injuries caused by people taking care into their own hands.
I had a patient once who came in because he was, you know, at a family Thanksgiving and his son-in-law had like put him on the floor and was like trying to pop his back, and come to find out he had actually fractured his rib, you know, because he pushed the gentleman was older, and so he had some osteoporosis. And so there's definitely, you know, ways that you can hurt yourself.
She thinks some of the problem may stem from the availability of thousands of do-it-yourself videos on the internet.
I had a patient recently. He was a new patient, and you know, I went through his initial workup and I adjusted him, and he was like, "Well, was that it?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "What? You're not going to yank my neck with a towel?"
How about that?
What'd you think about that?
That felt pretty good.
Pretty good.
I said, "Oh, you've been watching YouTube, huh?" And he's like, "Yeah, I've been watching YouTube." So,
in fact, my partner is one of those YouTube chiro fanatics. And after a few painful attempts at cracking my back, I'm thinking that maybe it's a job best left to the professionals.
All right. Inhale. Exhale.
Oh.
I'm so sorry. I'm trying. I'm really trying.
In Oakland, for Cross Currents, I'm Carla Estevez.
Oh, no. Okay. I'm going to stop now.
No, one more. Give me one more. No, one
think,
more.
I think
no,
I'm gonna break
Carla,
my thumb.
One more. One more, okay? One more.
Carla is a fellow in our 2021 Audio Academy. And there's more from our series At Work at KLW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. In addition to the more than 400,000 lives lost, COVID-19 has decimated small businesses across the country. San Francisco has lost nearly half of its small businesses in a year. And the rest of the Bay Area isn't doing much better. One visual reminder is all the boarded up storefronts, which over time have become an outdoor gallery for local artists. But how did it all come together? KLW's David Boyer spoke with one of the co-founders of Paint the Void.
My name is Meredith Winner, and I am the co-founder of Building 180, which is an art curation and production company based in San Francisco. And Building 180, during COVID, launched an initiative called Paint the Void, and we partnered with a nonprofit so that we could paint murals on boarded up storefronts.
Was there a particular spark that started it or a location or something?
Yeah, there was actually an article. I can't remember where the article was, but it was in the mission of all these storefronts that had been boarded. And it looked really, you know, frankly, apocalyptic and kind of scary. I actually was out of town. I was sheltering in place in upstate New York, where I'm from. I happened to be kind of trapped there when everything went down. And actually a friend of mine sent me the article, and she was like, you know, could Building 180 kind of get behind putting murals on this? And at first we it was really uncertain. Everything was super uncertain. We just didn't really know if that was possible. We didn't know if we should have artists painting outside. We didn't know if we were allowed to go outside. So we just kind of put our weight behind it and partnered with a nonprofit and raised money and kind of got not a go-ahead from the city of San Francisco, but not a no. So we kind of took the liberty to just run with it. When we didn't get rejected, we were like, okay, well, let's try to do this and see what happens, and then, you know, see if there's any fallout or anything. And there wasn't any fallout. It was actually the opposite. People really responded really well, and like the community, there was like a huge outpouring of community. We raised $10,000 in like 40 hours to pay artists. We were paying artists stipends for painting murals. They weren't really paying market rate for anything, which is something that we're hoping to do for phase two.
So how does it work? So there's a boarded up storefront and there are artists, but how do you make that?
Yeah, so it was really, the idea was like, if we get one artist and one storefront to kind of agree, right, and then it's all matching people and making sure that they are in communication with each other, the business owner and the artist, and also making sure that we have explicit permission from the business owners too. And everyone signs a waiver and it's all contractual based. It's not like a free for all by any means. we've tried to match the artists with businesses that are in the vicinity of their own neighborhoods to keep it hyper-local and also to avoid unnecessary travel. So a lot of the selection process has been shortlisting artists and then based on the locations of the businesses that have signed up and based on the location of the artists that have signed up, we typically send a business owner a few muralists to choose from. We're really matchmakers kind of at the end of the day. We are like curating it to some degree, but it's really like about what art resonates with the business owner and what neighborhood the match is in.
Are there any constraints around like instructions that you give the artists or?
No. I mean, and that's like a big fundamental for us at Paint the Void. It's just like giving artists really creative freedom. The only type of feedback really is if the business owner wants something specific, we try to accommodate that or just kind of give a nudge to the artist that and relay the information that that's what the business owner wants, but it's not always set in stone and they're usually pretty flexible.
Any spots that you wish you could paint that you have not been able to secure?
I can't like pinpoint that where that's happened. Everyone's been really receptive to it.
How is plywood as a canvas?
It depends on how nice the plywood is.
And is there a plan for what happens when they come down?
After they come down, we are hoping to have a show. We are currently storing them at a safe location. Some of the businesses also store the art for the artist. There is the chance that things will close again. So businesses are kind of holding on to some of the art too because, you know, there might be a grand closing, grand reopening, grand closing.
So how have the Black Lives Matter protests changed the project, if at all?
Yeah, we shifted all of our funding to fund Black artists only. And we have helped fundraise some other initiatives with, you know, murals in Oakland and, you know, helping on the funding side. Also just, you know, centering Black artists generally and paying Black artists is how we've been responding.
Do the murals themselves, do you feel like they've become more political over time?
Somewhat, yes. But again, like this is not something that Paint the Void has dictated ever. It's really up to the artist and the business owner what the content is.
And for people who want to see them, where are they and how do they find them?
On our website, we have a map. So if you go to paintthevoid.org, there's a map navigation at the top where you can see a snapshot image of the mural and who the artist is and where it is.
That was KALW's managing editor, David Boyer, speaking with Meredith Winner of Paint the Void. Since the project launched last April, they've raised nearly $250,000 and funded the creation of more than 110 murals. Now they're planning an additional 30 murals to be unveiled this spring. Find out how to get involved at KALW.org. And before we end the show, here's some new music from a local artist. This is Nopes from Oakland. Their new album, Dyork, came out this month. Today's Cross Currents team includes Annalise Finney, Andrew J.M. Garcia, Lisa Morehouse, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.